I've had people ask me to do a podcast about this subject, and I think it's a pretty good subject. It is about being your own reporter and being your own media. And we're going to talk about how to do that, how I think it is done, in podcast 915, The Bob Davis Podcasts. I just talked to Greg Ryan from Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul today, and he told me his phones are ringing and why. People keep flushing things down the toilet. They shouldn't flush down the toilet, and you got to watch out for that. If you have problems with plumbing or heating, or as we get into the warmer weather, air conditioning, you want reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. You know they go back four generations in Frogtown. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. As it gets warm, I'll be talking about AC checks, but you want this stuff running right. Ryan is an essential business. They are up and running through the crisis, so don't forget, in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes and Spotify for Androids. Tuned in, blogtalkradio.com, stitcher.com. Appreciate the likes and shares and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. Just click on the post that you see on Facebook and listen to the podcast. You don't need to comment. I'd much rather have shares. That helps the Bob Davis Podcast more. I've been doing this a long time. 10 years of podcasting and 10 years before that of talk radio. So, you know, something like 20 years of talk radio and podcasting, more than 10 years of podcasting. And before that, in management at radio stations and on air, going back to being a pup when I was 15 and I started writing news. So news reporting and covering news events and being part of news and being interested in news and history is nothing new to me. Now, obviously, the entire 40 years I've been in radio, I didn't do only information. I came to talk radio later because I wanted to be back on the air after years and years in research and management and so forth. And today, it is increasingly difficult to understand how to put events into context if you don't understand how to gather information. So I'm not surprised at current confusion regarding the info that comes out on coronavirus numbers, the death rates, transmissibility of the disease, outcomes, treatments, and so forth, or the amount of confusion regarding any event that might take place that involves this particular administration, which is unique, and I'll explain why in a couple of minutes. And it's not, you know, a biased statement. It's just a statement of fact. And lately, a number of people have said to me, how is it that you're able to gather information and you have all this information and I don't have this information, or I don't understand where you're getting that or how you're getting that? And the first thing to start with is kind of a disclaimer about my own personality. It is certainly a reasonable critique of my unique way that I do things for my friends to say things like, you know, you're smart and you come to usually correct conclusions. But when I listen to you, I don't understand. Your arguments don't always add up. And you ought to be smart enough to not make these kinds of arguments. So I got to give you a little background. And if you don't know me, then this is my excuse. And I've been told as well, that isn't a good enough excuse, but I'm going to give you the excuse. As I said, I've been doing this for a long time, but I also have come a long way from where I started in the world politically. And I think when you start in politics, you start from a particular point of view and you look for information that confirms your point of view because you want to feel confident and knowledgeable about what you believe. So you look for information that you believe. In addition to that, I am self-educated. So I didn't go to college because I started radio when I was 15, and all I wanted to do was radio, and I didn't want to waste time going to college. And at the same time, with my unique learning issues, my learning disabilities being hyperactive and things of that nature, which isn't a claim for some disability, it's just how I am, it was better if I educate myself. And so because I'm a voracious reader, I read myself from one place to another in the world. And as my nephew once said, you know, what should I read? And I said to him, and he was about 9 or 10, I said, well, what do you like? And he said, well, I like sports. And I said, well, just start reading books about sports. And read as many books as you can find about sports, and then that will lead you to other things, and then read books on those things, and keep doing that. And that's how you read yourself from one place to the other. You start reading books about what you're interested in, which when I was a kid, it was World War II, and you end up reading every book that Carl Jung wrote. That's kind of how it works. And you stumble across things because a book's in your house and you haven't read it yet, or somebody gives you a book, or you're interested in a topic. And when it comes to politics or current events, it's kind of the same thing. And for a while, you argue from a point of view of, you argue from a point of view of your particular biases. And then after a while, you start questioning your own biases. My word for that is a scotoma. So a scotoma is an area of partial alteration in the field of vision, consisting of a partially diminished or entirely denigrated visual acuity that is surrounded by a field of normal or relatively well-preserved vision. And every normal mammalian eye has a scotoma, S-C-O-T-O-M-A, in its field of vision, usually termed a blind spot. This is a location with no photoreceptor cells where the retinal ganglion cell axons that compose the optic nerve exit the retina. This location is called the optic disc. There's no direct conscious awareness of visual scotomas, but I have been in seminars where they will show you one of these pictures. If you look at it, you know, it's an old woman. And if you look at it long enough, it becomes a beautiful young woman because it's the same picture. It's just your way of looking at it. I really like the term scotoma because it describes a certain way of looking at things and a blind spot that you're unaware of because you look at things in this certain way. And I would say that I came from a certain perspective in politics. I was raised by a family of Republicans going back two or three generations. Obviously, the Republicans of yesteryear aren't like the Republicans of today, but I was raised in a Republican household, and I had Republican points of view. And those Republican points of view continued on for quite some time until I read myself from one place to another. And it started at a certain point during the Bush administration. Keep in mind, I was on talk radio during this time, and I'm not going to say that we were exhorted to, but you kind of fell into a certain perspective after the election of 2000 and really after the developments of 9/11, 2001. You ended up in a certain perspective, and so almost all of us had a scotoma when it came to being critical of events and happenings. I wonder what my reaction would be today if I were to go back in time to 2001 and on from there after the experience I've had in talk radio and doing podcasting, which has been a boon to being able to just talk about things, how you feel about them without any pressure personally exerted or otherwise about what team you're supposed to be fighting for. You know, it's very interesting how quickly we became critical of anybody who suggested, gee, maybe we got to think about some of this stuff before we do it. And so I've come a long way from that era of being adamant about certain points of view. And there's so much that I would say about this, and I don't want to take up the whole podcast talking about it, but, you know, during that period of time, there were, in 2000, there were a lot more objective news sources than there were, than there are today. And in those days, I would buy newspapers, and I would buy eight or nine newspapers or eight or six newspapers from the Byerly's, the local grocery store, or from, there was a newsstand in Calhoun Square, which is the mall here in uptown Minneapolis. And I would buy all these newspapers at the cigar store. And then I would bring them home and lay them out and read them all. And I would cut the stories out that I wanted to talk about. And I would underline or highlight the sections of the story. And initially, I would just go on the air with that information. And I was reading a huge amount of news from the newspaper because I felt that that was the best record. So I got the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the USA Today and the local paper and whatever was available, the Baltimore Sun or the Boston Globe or Financial Times of London and Barron's or Investors Business Daily, whatever I could get my hands on, I would buy. And I would do this every single day. And eventually I started going to a local diner in the morning. I'd spread my newspapers out and I would cut them up. And then I would read the articles that I cut out of it. And that's how I did what I did. And then I had this pile of information when I would go on the air. And people who gave me critiques were like, you know, because I was struggling to get all that information on the air. I wanted to get all that information on the air. But even so, what happened was there was a tendency to find the articles that reinforced my preconceived notions, my blindness to a particular issue, and then go with the facts that were in those commentaries or those. So if I found something by Max Boot that supported my view about the Middle East, I would just be all over that. And then eventually I started to actually write the shows and pull that stuff from sources and, again, did the same thing. Until at a certain point, that changed. Now, I'll tell you what changed. The first experience that made it change was the election of 20, I think it was 20, trying to remember. So it would have been 2008 when Mitt Romney ran against Barack Obama the first time, right? Wasn't it Mitt Romney? No, it was John McCain. So I guess that was 2008. That was the beginning because I went to the convention and I saw how the sausage is made and I started to say, and still had a certain perspective and point of view and scotoma or blind spot to what was really going on. And in 2012, I remember doing one of the roundtables that we used to do at News Talk, and the late Ron Rosenbaum said to me, and I was not a fan of Ron's and we were not friends. We were usually very much opposed, and I took things very seriously, and he did too. And so we were usually not necessarily on the same page. But, you know, he said to me one morning when we were doing a roundtable on a Friday morning, and he said, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he said, who do you think is going to win the nomination? I said, it's going to be Mitt Romney. And he said, is he going to win the presidency? And I said, no. Because I seriously didn't think that he would. And then as the election progressed, continued. And the polling was very close between the president at that time, Barack Obama, and the Republican candidate, Mitt Romney. Now, that's the year that I went to the convention. I don't even remember where. I guess it was in Tampa. And watched that whole thing go down and again, starting to distance and getting a little skeptical. And I remember right before so I steadfastly refused. So I remember I was on with my friend Tom Emmer, who's a congressman now, and Tom would just be rah, rah, rah for Mitt Romney. And I just would say, you know, the polls do not show that Mitt Romney is going to win. And this was carried on all through August, September, and October of that year. And people would call up and they'd be, what's wrong with you? You're raining on the parade and everything else. And at some point, right before the election, I was pulled in and my boss said, you need to get on the bandwagon. You need to, it's hurting the audience because you're being against. And I said, whoa, I'm not against anybody. I'm just saying that the polls don't show that Mitt Romney is going to win because they didn't. And, I was castigated for not being on the team, and it wasn't good for the station and all this other nonsense. And so then we went to go do election coverage. And I remember saying at the beginning of election coverage, I remember saying at the time, watch Pennsylvania and Ohio. And if he loses Ohio and Pennsylvania, then he's not going to be the president. And of course, Ohio came in for Obama, and we had a whole room at the comedy club, Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis, full of people who were just couldn't wait because they were there because they were convinced that Romney was going to win. And when he lost Ohio and that was the end of the show, they basically, even though we had a whole night to go, they all got up and left. And I remember my son was in the audience at the time. I think he was a freshman in college or a senior in high school. And he said, I've never seen anything like that in my short, innocent life. I've never seen anything like that. They were so disappointed. Because why? Because they were convinced, because they had been told by the powers that be and all the people on the radio that Romney had it made. And I remember I went to a Herman Cain thing at that idiotic taxpayer rally, which was taken over by the Min GOP over at the Capitol after years and years of being essentially a libertarian anti-tax rally. And Herman Cain spoke in the rain. It was pouring down rain that day. And we went to lunch afterward, and we were in the St. Paul Club or wherever the lunch was. And some guy from Indianapolis who's a talk show host was Romney's going to kick Obama's ass. And I said, because I had been watching the polls, and I remember I said, if you think Romney's going to win against Obama, I'm just going to tell you he's in for the fight of his life. Because by that time, I had started looking at other kinds of information besides the kinds of information that would confirm my bias. And so I could be right about something because I was using my analytic skills to actually say what's going to be the outcome. And that's really, really important. And I told that whole story. I guess the final thing was covering the Republicans in 2016. At that point, the scotoma disappeared and the scales fell from my eyes. And I realized that the whole thing is a bunch of nonsense because you could not go talk to the candidates. I thought I was going to go interview candidates. And they would give the same speech at the same place at the same time over and over again. And there was virtually no access to any of them unless you were someone that was on their team, like Fox News. So after that, and after the nomination of Donald Trump at Cleveland and which, by the way, was they didn't let the convention do its job. This is all, ancient history. I kind of became, after that, skeptical. So I would say, people say, well, how do you do what you do? And how do you know all this information that you know? Well, the first thing is, you have to be skeptical. You have to be skeptical of all sources, social media and otherwise. And I've been telling you why, and I'm going to tell you again why in the second half of this podcast. And again, I've been doing this an awful long time. And the thing that I've learned is, they lie, and I'm speaking of government sources. They don't know necessarily all of the information themselves, and they have their own biases. I've also learned that the first actions are usually ineffective and incorrect to deal with any kind of crisis, and they will always ballyhoo those first movements. They will tell you that they're doing the right thing and we're doing what we need to do, and this is why, and we're projecting this image of great monolithic confidence and competence when the exact opposite is true. And so the reality is that the government almost always overreaches in a crisis. And in the second half of this podcast, I'm going to very quickly tell you how you can work against that and what you're supposed to do if you really want to be objective in this maelstrom of opinionating in politics and lying in politics on both sides of the political spectrum, and misinformation and overreach and overcompetence, overprojection of overcompetence, when most of the time the government is not very competent, not because they're not sincere or well-educated or actually skilled at what they do, but because it's the government and it's a political beast. And our government today in the United States is very powerful. It's also a blunt instrument. So without going on and on about that, you've heard me talk about that many times. I'm going to tell you how to be your own reporter in the second half of this podcast. Another essential business right now, because people are shifting their business. Almost all businesses are making a shift towards digital. And I think this is going to be something that continues after this crisis is over. And so you need a heavy-duty payment processor, and that is ReliaFund. In fact, it should be known that ReliaFund provides payment processing services to other payment processors. So that's how good they are. What do? They integrate their systems with your systems, whether it's e-commerce or whether it is your back office systems, so that you can use QuickBooks with ReliaFund and other kinds of accounting services. ReliaFund does that. ReliaFund is a payment processor that has been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. They are OGs when it comes to payment processing in this country. No long-term contracts, secure, technology-focused. If you call them, you'll talk to a human being. Greg Lowry or Kevin Hill, 866-243-5040, 866-243-5040, or check them out online at R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, ReliaFund.com. Or you can click on the ReliaFund banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Very quickly, I want to remind everyone that, you know, this is going to end at some point. You're spending a lot of time in your home, and you're probably thinking, we really need a new kitchen. So Randy Graybow at Whitetail Builders, his favorite thing to do is to redo kitchens, and he is really good at it. And if you decide to do something with Whitetail, they will be there with you from start to finish, because that's what they do. Attention to detail, and Randy Graybow is an amazing craftsman. 612-282-8801. That's 612-282-8801. Or check him out online at WhitetailBuildersInc.com. They're in Andover, Minnesota. You can also click on the Whitetail Builders banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. I mentioned this Steve Bannon bromide that is actually advice to candidates and governors and presidents, and that is that you fill the channel with crap, meaning that you put so much crap out that reasoning is almost impossible, and that you have control of the media battle space. The media battle space is your brain. And so if you don't want your brain to be used as the media battle space, the first thing you have to do is disbelieve everything anyone who is in office says about anything. The second thing you have to do is disbelieve anything anyone says who is on a national platform. This is a national platform, so why should I listen to you, Bob Davis? And the answer is that I am telling you, I'm not paid by anyone to say anything or think any way in a certain way. There is no funding for this podcast that's political in any way. It's advertiser supported. And I'm telling you honestly what I think, and I am willing to admit that I'm wrong. And I've said this for years, and I do admit when I am wrong. And the second thing that I do, and this is really relative in the last two or three years, is I don't tell you what's going to happen. You know, I don't make predictions about what is going to happen, and I don't take positions against this guy or against that guy. This is a non-denominational statement that you should never believe what anyone on a funded national platform is, whether it's a newspaper, whether it is a website, whether it is a communications platform, the president's office, the U.S. Congress, the Justice Department, or anyone else, because they are always saying what they are saying for the benefit of the media. So if you want to know if somebody's platform is biased, or if you want to know, let's suppose someone says something to you, like they make an argument. So you take the text of that argument as best you remember it, and you type that into your search window on your phone, and you click on it, and you will get the websites most of the time that information came from. You'll get a YouTube video, or you'll get, you know, some Rush Limbaugh thing, or you'll get some Rachel Maddow thing, or whatever it is. You'll get the argument. And then you can take that source and research that source. Who owns and funds this platform, whatever it is, whether it's Glenn Beck or something to that effect. And then you want to get to know the name. So you want to get to know if it's the Koch brothers or Tom Steyer or you know, some government agency or some right-wing group like the, you know, right-wing rich person like the Mercers and everything else. And by the way, These people have the right to do this. This is not, they're not doing anything illegal, but they are supporting, because they have a lot of money, they are supporting communications channels that they support the ideas of. So if somebody's on a communications platform that's funded by the Mercers, generally speaking, they're funded by the Mercers for the chief purpose of maintaining a certain perspective on the state of Israel, the nation of Israel, and Israel's defense ideas and Israel's conservative foreign policy ideas or conservative ideas when it comes to dealing with the Palestinian question. That is almost always the case with almost all of the platforms the Mercers plug into. If you're on one of their platforms, you're there to support Israel. You're not there, and they don't necessarily care what you say otherwise, but if you say something against Israel, you're going to be off the platform pretty quickly. You just have to look up at any one point the funding for these organizations to understand who's behind them. Once you understand who's behind them, then you understand why they're saying A, B, or C. As far as searching and pasting arguments into your site or looking for, let's suppose you see something on Medium. People think Medium is a news organization with reporters who write about things. Medium's basically a blog. I could write something in Medium that was completely outrageous, and they would print it if it was well enough written. And it's up to me to support or defend what I'm saying. And people could share that out onto social media, and I could say, on June 5th, the sky will turn red because the Trump administration is pumping this ion into the atmosphere that turns the sky red. And if I had enough supporting arguments and evidence, it would get printed and people would share it and people might start to believe that. So this is the way through social media, this is the way that the Russians or whoever is behind all the propaganda has been using bots to dump stuff onto the internet to try to twist people's thinking. And it works. That's the thing that's amazing about it, because people never look at where a particular piece comes from, especially if they have a scotoma, especially if they are a supporter of President Trump or a detractor of President Trump. They're always going to post something from that perspective, and you cannot get them to see things in a different way because they haven't had that experience of suddenly going, you know what, these guys lie, because they do, and they always lie. That is an almost constant truth, regardless of political party. The people in power, whether they're senators or congressmen or presidents, judges, justices, candidates, they all flat out lie through their teeth. So you always have to vet the source where something comes from. You have to know who funds it, who those people are, and where they came from, and their political points of view. And you could do that all from your phone. So if you're waiting in a, you know, if you're waiting at the doctor's office and you see something on social media, just copy out the statement that the person wrote and put it in your search window, and that will lead you on a little mission where you can find out that. And as soon as you start doing that, you're going to start realizing where most of this comes from, and then you're going to start seeing situations where the same source comes up two or three different times. And then you're going to start going, huh, so maybe this view that we need to do A, B, or C is a little bit biased, and wonder why, and what does that mean? So you have to look for sources and search for yourself, because no one's going to do that. Talk show hosts and shows like Fox and everything else, they have 10 minutes, and the longest segment that you have is 10 minutes. And so they have 10 minutes to create an argument, form an argument, make a statement, create a sense of urgency, and get you to keep listening. If it's a podcast, generally it's a tape of a radio show, and it's the same thing. It's just 10 minutes here, 5 minutes there, and you never get into the depth. One of the things about my podcast is people have to think when they're listening, and it's really hard to drive and listen and think at the same time, apparently, because I put as much content as I can get into a podcast like this, and I will go long if the content supports this. So you always have to vet the sources, and I don't care what it is. If it's the New York Times, and a certain doctor is quoted, you have to look that doctor up. You have to look up, for example, Dr. Redman at the CDC. A lot of people don't know that Dr. Redman at the CDC is a strong supporter of Donald Trump. So one of the things Donald Trump does, and this is certainly isn't anything unusual when it comes to presidents, they like to have people in key positions that they agree with. And Dr. Redman seems like a grandfatherly type, but he is hardly unbiased when it comes to his views particularly about global warming, which I kind of agree with, but I don't like the fact that he's a political partisan. He is not an objective source, but he comes across as an objective source. Oh, here's this guy. He's incredibly professional. You know, listen to what he says. He's probably right. And so you'll always find out that this stuff will lead back to a particular political party, a particular funder, or a particular affiliation that the person will have. Now, let's go back to filling the channel with crap. This is the Steve Bannon, perspective that what is happening is that the channel's being filled with crap. So do you remember when Donald Trump said that the coronavirus thing would be over by Easter? And this was a two-day story that very interesting. So when he said that in that press conference, the next morning, I woke up and I grabbed my phone and I looked at my stuff that I usually look. I have a series of websites that I go to and I look at. And immediately there was a bunch of articles about how this thing was going to be over by Easter. So, and I'm not saying that Trump ordered this up, but I am saying, especially the commentaries by people who should know better. Well, actually, if you look at the numbers and if you look at the Diamond Princess, it supports the idea that really most people aren't going to get this. And the death numbers are way too high. And that's what happens as we test more people and all this other stuff. And you have to understand statistics and everything else, supporting what Trump said. Maybe the president might be a little bit hopeful, but he might be right, and here's why. The very next day. So the channel was filled and kicked off by him basically saying something that was untrue. Now, yesterday, actually it was today, Anthony Fauci characterized the president's statement as an aspirational message of hope. Well, no, it was a flat-out lie. It was a lie. He lied. He said it will be over by Easter because he is lying. He doesn't want people to be afraid. He doesn't want – he's not trying to buoy anybody up. He wants to try to minimize this because he didn't do what he was supposed to do early on. And that's another thing that I've checked out, and it's true. When they could have done more, when they could have tested everyone at the beginning, they did not. So, I shouldn't really say he's trying to do this, but it sure seems like that to me. But in any case, basically, he lied. He didn't. You can. If a child did that, you would say to the child, you know, Bobby, don't lie because you're lying because you said blah 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 blah. The child doesn't say, oh no, that was just an aspirational message of hope, Mom. I wasn't trying to lie about my sister stealing the candy at the store. I was simply saying that she got me some candy and it was really great. No, you lied and you covered up the fact that your sister stole the candy. So that's a lie. Well, how would you characterize something that's flat out untrue? And I can't imagine that an intelligent person wouldn't have known that making that kind of a statement is ridiculous. It's filling the channel with crap so that nobody has any time or means to double check the sources. When you double check sources and find national talk show hosts and commentators that say things because they've been cued to say them by a platform owner or by a politician because they've got a scotoma and they want to believe that politician, doesn't mean that they're wrong either. Sometimes they're right. Obviously, if the coronavirus goes away by Easter, then we will have to say that Trump was right. So I'm not saying that people who say things are wrong. I'm saying people say things for a reason. And if you really want to know what's going on, you've got to run that stuff down. And you have to try to determine the facts as best you can. And then you have to stick to those. And this is where we get into conspiracy theory. So people say, well, this is a biological weapon and it came from China and they're trying to kill us all. I don't know that. And you don't know that. You can certainly speculate, but you don't have any facts to back it up. Now, what's a fact? A fact is a truth that can be confirmed from two or three or four separate sources and not somebody saying, I think. If somebody says, John Stevens yesterday speculated that the cause of the car accident on Route 35 was that General Motors makes a tire for the car this person was driving, and it's been proven to be inferior, and the tire blew out, the car spun out, and killed six people on the freeway. It's because of the tire. Well, we don't know that that's because of what – that's. We don't know that that is why. A plane crashes, and people say, well, obviously it was because this happened. Well, you don't know that until you know that. So once it's investigated and the investigators come out and say, yes, the engine fell off and here's why. You don't know why a plane crashed. And most of the time, pilots will say, I think it was pretty sure it was this or that, but we'll have to wait and see till the investigation is over. So when we hear about conspiracy theories, when we hear about, new age, a new age is being introduced. It's the age of Aquarius and things are going to change and horoscopes say this. Those are not facts. When somebody says, I knew somebody in the Air Force and they said that this and, what was their name? Well, I don't know. I knew somebody that worked for this agency and they say, what's their name and what's the agency? Because I want to be able to call that guy up and ask him if he said that. So then when you press people, even if it's in conversation, you find out, no, that's not what the guy said. Actually, he said something else. But, why'd you say that? Well, I just wanted to make people feel better. Well, why would you take it upon yourself to basically tell a lie to make people feel better? But this is what human beings do. And so you have to be absolutely ruthless about fact-checking and sticking to facts that you know. Finally, I'm going to tell you, as far as mental health is concerned, as far as truth is concerned, as far as determining facts are concerned, my best advice is to turn off CNN, Fox, MSNBC, turn them all off. In fact, I would even include in that all the financial channels, Bloomberg and CNBC and so forth, because all they do is just take five big stories of the day. For in any one 24-hour period, there's three big stories. And those stories are going to be spun off, repeated, and rotated throughout the day. So if you see a story at 9 o'clock in the morning on Bloomberg about Apple, something happens with Apple, or a CEO leaves, something to that effect, you're going to see that all day long in various forms. And you're going to see people being brought in to be interviewed about Apple. And you'll also see on any given day, on any given story, go find me an expert. One of the problems right now with coronavirus is all of the experts, so all of the epidemiologists and other biological experts on viruses, they're all being tasked to do interviews on all of the biggest media. So now you're down to the second tier. So we have to have somebody on who knows. So if it's a story about, I'll give you a great example. And I'm running long, but it's okay. I'm going to give you a great example. When the bridge at 35W fell, I will never forget, I got a call that afternoon. It was from my producer, and he goes, dude, the bridge fell. And I said, what should we do? And we were talking about it, and I was like, there's nothing we can do. The afternoon show is on the air now. Then the night guy comes in, and then we have the overnight show, and they'll probably talk about it. And then tomorrow morning, we're going to want to talk about it. Let's get this on or try to do that. And I generally shied away from experts because most of the time, if it's something like the bridge, there weren't any experts available anyway. I was just blown away by the number of people that I knew in this industry who weren't even doing news or information, who called up the cable channels and made themselves available because they lived in Minneapolis. One of them did a talk show that had nothing to do with news events and called CNN to get on the air and made it sound like he was standing next to the bridge. He was nowhere near the bridge. This is a perfect example of what happens when it comes to the people that you see on cable news channels. If it's a war, anybody with a uniform is going to be brought in, whether they know what they're talking about. This is Colonel Jeff Johnson. Colonel Johnson is an Air Force major or colonel, rather, and decorated and blah, 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 blah. And he's got all these theater medals. And then when you find out, you look up Colonel Johnson, and you find out that Colonel Johnson is in charge of repairing radios or logistics and doesn't know anything about what he's been asked about. But because he's a source, he will wax poetic about just about anything. This happens all the time. Happens with lawmakers, happens with just about everyone. Why would you even bother listening to that? Why would you even bother thinking that there's any kind of CNN completely lost all credibility. Fox News completely lost all credibility. MSNBC, I wouldn't waste my time even thinking about, and on it goes. It used to be these agencies had reporters who, went out and covered news stories. Now they just, what do? It's talk radio on TV, and people are watching Sean Hannity. They don't care whether Sean Hannity has the janitor on to talk about Vietnam or, you know, Cambodia or, you know, Afghanistan or what's going on in Ohio, as long as they got a warm body in there that can argue with somebody else who disagrees with them. That is the extent of the research that goes into 90% of this stuff on television. And as far as if it's a opinion show like Sean Hannity or Rachel Maddow or whatever his name is, Tucker Carlson, you know, you have to be aware that they are partisans. And the other thing is social media. Again, you are not going to get any kind of information from social media. You're going to get idiots on parade. You're going to get everybody's opinion, and most of the time, it's terrible. One of my favorite memes is the picture of the news set, and the reporter is saying, you know, coming up next, we're going to talk about the coronavirus with Facebook media expert Karen, you know, some woman from Tuscaloosa who's on Facebook and writes about, you know, puts posts up about the coronavirus. Nobody knows what they're talking about. So I monitor social media because I post these podcasts. And what I'm monitoring social media to do is take down comments from my page because I don't want comments. I just want you to see the podcast post, click on it, go to the page, listen to the podcast. If you don't want to do that, don't comment because nobody knows what they're talking about. And they repeat stuff that other people say, and it's just a giant game of telephone, and it's a complete waste of time. You aren't going to get any news from Facebook. You aren't going to get any news from Twitter. You aren't going to get any news from Instagram. You're going to get pictures of the hot girl who has the van in the desert. That's what Instagram is for. It's not for news gathering. Best suggestion I can make is that you get one of these news agencies like Reuters or AP, have an app, and you pick as objective a source as you can that puts out stories that are fact-based, generally speaking, even if they're slightly biased one way or the other. And when I say one way or the other, I don't mean Fox News. I'm saying people would say, well, AP, they're liberals. Well, at least they're not conservatives. Let's just put it that way. So you start from a particular source, and I vetted AP stories. So I know that most of the time they're fairly fair. They come down – if they're going to do analysis, they come down on both political parties and representatives of political parties to make sure that they're fairly objective on that. The problem with factual news and information today is that it appears like it's a liberal or biased left-wing publication because it's not touting the right-wing pro-Trump point of view. If it doesn't start out, our great president Donald Trump did an amazing thing today. He said, dot, dot, dot. It starts out with, in a news conference today in Washington, the president made the following statement. Bang. Next paragraph. You know, and then you have to go get the other side of the story. So, you know, Democrat Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the president's out of his mind. Conservatives read that and say, see, they're biased. They hate Trump. Well, no, they're just reporting the stories. This whole thing with coronavirus, the media is responsible for making this, causing people to panic. Did you look up the word panic? Have you thought about why people are buying guns, for example? So the right says people who are buying toilet paper are idiots and retarded, and the left says people who buy guns are mouth-breathing Nazis. Well, why are people buying guns? Because we're in a national crisis. People think, you know, I haven't bought a gun, and I'm a little bit worried about keeping my family secure, so I'm going to buy a shotgun and some ammunition just in case. That's a completely reasonable action. That is not panic. And it is not panic for women, in particular, to buy a lot of toilet paper because, quite honestly, they use a lot more toilet paper than guys do, and they don't want to get caught with no toilet paper or tissues or, you know, hand sanitizer or whatever it is that they use to do what they do. I don't see this as panic. Look up the word panic and pray that you never see real panic socially. So you get a single news source that's fairly reliable. And you start with that every day. And then you move to the more biased news sources that you like to use. But you get yourself into a position where you're starting your day in terms of news without cable, without talk radio, without national public radio, without any of that, and you're reading. You can take in more information in 10 minutes than you will see all day. In terms of the density of the content, you can take in more information than you will see all day anywhere else by simply starting with a fairly balanced source of information and then go from there. There's a newspaper called, I think it's called The Hour, and I have experienced them as a fairly decent source for factual information on something. Certainly, they have commentary, and you have to know the difference between commentary. The other thing is look at the date the story was written. Sometimes you're reading a story that was written, you know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, and in a fast-moving crisis, that piece of that story is completely useless. So those are my tips for actually being your own reporter. If you do this, and also I do say this because this is true too, try to go to the event of where this thing happened and look at the ground at the very least, if you can, you know, whatever it is. When you do that, you begin to have a better understanding of what you're reading and seeing. And if you do that, then that scotoma is going to start to diminish when it comes to information. So that's how to be your own reporter. Now, there's just one more thing, and I'll tell you about that in a second. Well, manufacturing is nuts, and I'm just going to mention to you right now that DepoStar here in the United States is always standing by to help manufacturers bring stuff back to the U.S. If this is you, don't forget DepoStar in Minnesota, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. Visit DepoStar at their website at DepoStar.com, DepoStar, DepoStar. Yes, I am printing a lot of stuff. I know if you're working at home, you're printing a lot of stuff and you're probably spending a lot for those print cartridges. And who wants to go to the store? Oh, wait, that store, that big box office store is probably closed. That's why Cartridge World in Maple Grove can help you out. Metro-wide across St. Paul, they can save you 30% compared to the big box stores on those print cartridges. Free delivery on qualifying orders. They can even get you a printer if you qualify. Cartridge World, 763-420-6632, or click on that Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. So I'm rushing because this thing has gone way too long. We're at about 46, 47, 48 minutes. Normally, I never go this long, but, you know, this is a good extra podcast. I forgot to mention that one of the things you can also do is read source documents. So one of the things I'm going to be doing in the next podcast, podcast 916, I am reading the whole bill for 800 pages of, you know, herefores and what whereas for the so-called $2 trillion stimulus bill or the CARE relief package, which is a canard for the coronavirus. And, you know, it never hurts to read the source documents. You don't have to be a lawyer and you don't have to read every single word and understand every single word. But what happens is, again, I have a whole bunch of stuff to look up. Like, for instance, I needed to look up the Railroad Unemployment Act and I needed to look up a bunch of other stuff so I could understand that there's a several pages of regulations for each and individual previous institution, whether it's the Railroad Unemployment Act or federal unemployment, in order to understand what they're doing. And reading source documents, whatever they are, really play into it. And the more you read, you'll begin to understand. Keeping in mind, if you see something you don't understand, just type in the text of that and look it up so you can understand what it is. So on the same token, if you know history, for example, because this is supposed to be a relief act, I'm going to have to look up the National Recovery Act and the Economic Recovery Act of the 1930s. More importantly, the National Recovery Act, portions of which were struck down because they were unconstitutional. So I want to look those up to really understand how this compares to those because it purports to be a relief bill. Is it? So that's the kind of stuff that you kind of have to do is look up and read as many source documents as you possibly can. All right. Thanks for listening to podcast 915, the Bob Davis Podcasts.
When I said it out loud, it wasn't as strong as it was in my head. I tried not to think about it, so it came back louder. I think it's been about a year since I became a snob. Decided not to play along, so it grew bigger. Me and my head have become very, very, very close. We just superiority complex.